In Australia's snowy mountains, thousands of wild horses graze on alpine plains. They've inspired poetry, books and films, creating an epic myth about these intelligent creatures and their place in Australian culture. But today, they're at the heart of a bitter battle.
They're not meant to be there. They're a hard-hoofed, invasive species. There's 90% of Australia you can have a horse on. There's no need to have one in the national park.
Ecologists want the so-called Brumby horses gone, saying they're decimating a pristine environment, including the habitats of endangered native animals. But horse activists are lobbying hard to keep them, arguing that their community's lifestyle and cultural identity is under threat.
Whatever life I've got left in me, I'll fight for them.
101 East reveals the bitter clash over whether Australia's wild horses are a national icon or feral pests.
In an isolated valley deep in the snowy mountains, a group of tourists settle in for an alpine experience. Their guide is high country heavyweight Peter Cochran, who runs a horse track business that draws on the myth of the man from Snowy River.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away. And he joined the Wildbush horses. He was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. If you read that poem, The Man from Snowy River, though it is fictional to a degree, but it expresses a great bonding and a great spiritual connection between these people and this culture that's in the mountains.
Even in summer on these high mountain plains, the nights are cold and clear. The next morning, time to saddle up.
All aboard, folks, mount up, let's go.
These are familiar trails to former MP Peter Cochran. He was raised on a nearby property. Each summer, his family grazed their cattle on these plains.
Well, at the times we were mustering, as a child, we used to come up into the park and spend time in the huts, camping out in the bush. So I became a part of the cultural experience of coming up here and living with the people in the huts in the mountains, you know, during the summer. Mm. And still do it today.
Cattle grazing was banned in the park decades ago, creating bitter divisions between environmentalists and graziers. The fight over brumbies is the latest frontier for these mountain communities.
I'm going to speak out on their behalf, and if I need to do that to protect the lifestyle and the cultural identity of these people that live around the mountains, I'll do it. And whatever life I've got left in me, I'll fight for them.
Just a few kilometres from the horse riding camp is Currungo Homestead, a former grazing property that's now tourist accommodation.
First day was great, went to the Blue Water Holes.
Melbourne lawyer Ian Dunn has been coming here for 50 years.
Currungo's been a feature of my life since at least the early 70s.
Dunn is among a group of volunteers who help look after the property. Chasing trout in Currungo Creek is one of his great joys. But his secret fishing spot has been transformed by horses.
There's no grass, is there? The grass is an inch high. Piles of manure every 20 metres. The banks of Currungo Creek completely trodden down. The creek is twice as wide as it used to be, half as deep. The water in it, instead of being gin clear, you can't even see the bottom. The erosion caused by the horses is just dramatic.
He's witnessed a population explosion.
Look to your left, you can see horses right in front of you. You can see 100. Up to your right, you can see another 50 or 100. Many of them with infants with them. So they're breeding quickly, and I suppose that's one of the differences. In the last 2 years, population will have increased by about 40%. It's not a national park with scenes like we're seeing now. Have the decency not to call it a national park. Call it the Currangow Horse Park.
Pam O'Brien was an area manager for the National Parks and Wildlife Service until she retired just a few months ago. She's passionate about horses and native animals, like the broad-toothed rat, which was once common here.
Broad-toothed rat's this gorgeous little rat-like creature that doesn't bite and doesn't smell. It's really cute, and they make these little grass runways. And we could always go along this certain part of the park, in the southern part, and show people the runways and how they lived and everything. Well, we were there for nearly 2 days and we did not find one runway. All we saw was horse damage.
With decades on the ground in Kosciuszko, former rangers like Pam O'Brien and Paul Hardy remember what this country was like with fewer horses.
We've got a creek environment here which normally would be covered up with vegetation. It's been trampled and there's no vegetation whatsoever on the creek environment. And in contrast, we've got the sphagnum bog on this side, which you can see in some places where it's already been starting to be opened up by horses. That's what it should look like. There should be, you know, thick sphagnum bog covering the creek right up there.
And there's a couple of the culprits just around the corner there.
There is. There's usually a few horses up here, and if we were to go up there, you'd see this is the same all the way up, that cover on the creek has been destroyed. It's disheartening. It's totally disheartening. Something's gone so badly wrong that all our efforts seem to be now relegated to being second to a feral horse.
It's really sad, especially when, in, you know, my career, when you work to look after the park and all the species in the park. And, you know, I've left and it's in a much worse condition than when I started.
In some places, the damage is so bad, rangers are building enclosures to protect endangered native animals. This fence line guards the last place of refuge of a native fish species, the stocky Galaxias.
The staff are identifying areas that need to be fenced, the really critical areas that are having a lot of impact. It's like a zoo, having little enclosures that people could come to. And if you want to see a broad-toothed rat, well, in Kosciuszko National Park, we have these little remote zoos that you can come and have a look at these animals in. It's ridiculous.
Exactly how many horses are in the park is hotly contested between the opposing sides.
Okay, coming up.
To get an accurate estimate of the horse population, you must take to the air.
Beautiful, beautiful plains of Tasmania. Amazing. You can already see the mobs of horses? Yeah, easily. Yep. Have a look through here. Look at what, you know, the mobs we've got running through this area. Yeah.
Any census of the park must somehow tally the horses you don't see. A complex method called distance sampling is used. The number of horses counted by aerial spotters is multiplied using a formula that takes into account animals hidden by trees and terrain.
As I said, it's not a haphazard method, it's a proven method. They've used it for many, many years, you know, not to just count horses, but to count feral pigs, feral goats, and it works.
Based on a 2020 aerial survey, national parks estimate a population of more than 14,000 horses. Scientists say numbers are growing by up to 20% a year.
People, to believe these counts, do have to rely a little bit on the fact that the people conducting them are qualified, are professionals. They're getting their work peer-reviewed by people internationally who are, you know, independent scientists who are saying, yep, this is correct, so we should trust it.
And a little bit of a climb.
These numbers are completely rejected by horse advocates.
Yeah, we don't trust the science. And science has been corrupted by politics in a whole range of fields, and that's one of them.
Slow the matter as we go up here, Matt.
The figure of 14,000 has been accepted by the New South Wales government. It has signed off on a plan to reduce the number of horses to 3,000 within the next 5 years.
This one's directly below us, yeah.
Animals will either be trapped and rehomed, shot in the park, or sent to the abattoir. The quickest method of controlling numbers, shooting from a helicopter, has been ruled out.
Well, I see it from the perspective of the country, and they're not meant to be there. They're a hard-hoofed, invasive species. They're not endangered. You know, there's 90% of Australia you can have a horse on. There's no need to have one in the national park, that's for sure.
There's no reason why we have to destroy our natural and Indigenous heritage in order to keep a few feral horses up in the mountains.
This is the spectacular Lower Snowy River. It's a vast wilderness that stretches all the way to Victoria and beyond. It's where parts of the Man from Snowy River poem were set, and for that reason it has great emotional power to horse supporters. And it's valued for its pristine environmental state, for plants and animals that are found nowhere else, and for the fact that there isn't a residence as far as you can see. Nobody lives here. But it is contested territory. This group of environmentalists is about to set off on the Lower Snowy River.
I'm really excited because it's my first time in this upper part of the river and in this Myadbo Wilderness area, which is really special.
Now, you need it sort of skinny up this end.
For some on the trip, this is more than a holiday. Professor Jamie Pittock is an environmental scientist. Also on the journey is Andrew Cox, the head of the environmental activist group, the Invasive Species Council.
Look, I've really wanted to get down the Snowy River, and who better person to go with than Richard Swain?
Richard Swain is a veteran river guide and environmental campaigner.
I can see by the way they pack their boats, this is a good crew. Already, that's promising.
They filmed their journey. It begins with an 8-hour scramble past unnavigable rapids.
This is real Man from Snowy River country. This is the pine-clad ridges, the rugged mountains. This is the Snowy River. The men and women that came in here with the stock, they were fantastic horsemen, fantastic stockmen. It's a rich history, but it wasn't great for country. It's destroyed this land and it's changed it. And to continue with leaving just feral horses on the land, this land cannot recover from that era.
They are dismayed by what they see.
The damage, the plants that are missing, the erosion, the seed heads chewed off, everything, the silt in the water, the lack of native animals. It's a sad, sad picture that you see if when you know what you're looking for.
I'm particularly worried by the feral horses systematically eating out particular plants that are so important for the ecology of this place. One example is the common reed, or Phragmites, that grows along the edge of the river. I've just spent 5 days floating down the Snowy River, and the only places these reeds grow are where the horses cannot reach.
Richard Swain, Andrew Cox and Jamie Pittock, part of the Reclaim COSI environmental campaign, are among the loudest voices, calling for the removal of horses as quickly as possible. They believe the management plan doesn't go far enough.
At the moment, the best weapon we have to reduce these feral herbivores is aerial culling. And it's the most humane method. And we need to clean Australia up of feral plants and animals.
Their unequivocal stance has put them in the sights of horse advocates. On pro-Brumby Facebook pages, some with tens of thousands of supporters, Swain, Pittock and Cox are the enemy. Some of the attacks posted by members of these groups are vulgar, others are barely veiled death threats. I would like to use a double-barreled shotgun on them and then load these evil morons into a truck and dump them. I am very wicked, lol. Now, to take these cretins out would be my dream. If I has the money, I would put a price on their heads. Hope someone might do it for free. Richard Swain in particular gets under the skin of some horse supporters. Violent threats extend to his wife and children. Let's cull Swain, be done with it, if only that easy. How about we hunt you and your family down to be shot? Shut up or you will be shut up permanently.
Growing up around here, the colonial crowd feel that they are the mountain men and women and they have a monopoly over what this place is. I guess I'm a threat. I've got a leg to stand on. I am a river guide in the parks. I am born and bred here. I am of Aboriginal heritage. So they see that as a threat to their argument.
Some attacks by members of online community groups focus on Swain's business.
Our business has been targeted. We can't brand our vehicles anymore because they have been vandalised and they will be vandalised. So after the second lot of flat tyres, it was pretty obvious that things could get worse and dangerous. So we sold one of our vehicles and we've unbranded all the rest.
To suddenly see this degenerate into almost madness, you know, where the argument gets to the point of threatening people in the community and people that people know, you know, friends, neighbours, and not, you know, threatening each other or not speaking up, being afraid to sort of be involved in a debate. You've gone from a situation of protecting a unique park to almost anarchy, you know. All of a sudden it's, what the hell has happened here?
It's become quite divisive. We have had staff threatened at work, and it's made it very difficult. I suppose the worst examples are threats on Facebook mostly, and threats to people's kids at school. It's probably the worst. And, you know, that can have a big impact on the staff that are working there. They're just trying to do their job and trying to look after the park and not feeling safe.
It's clear this fight is about much more than horses.
If National Parks and Wildlife Service feel as though they've been threatened, well, look at it from the other side, the people who their whole lifestyle has been changed by the Snowy Mountain scheme, the ski industry, the invasion of people into their areas all the time as tourists. And some people see that as being an offence to them. So think about the people who have been affected by government policy all the time, where you see a massive Snowy Mountains development wrecking the land all over the place at the same time as they're trying to remove a few Brumbies out of the park. These are the things that develop the anger. It's not me that's developing the anger. I'm identifying it.
This presentation we put together, it's taken us a couple of weeks.
At this meeting in the town of Cooma, Peter Cochrane and his allies planned their ongoing strategy to preserve both horse riding and Brumbies in the park.
We rule out aerial shooting entirely, and with regards to ground shooting, totally ruled out.
This ex-MP has had remarkable success in influencing government policy.
The thing that they left out was the no mention of the recreational horse riding within the park.
And I think we acknowledged that, you know, horse riders actually have a significant part to play in the park.
In 2018, years of lobbying culminated in the passing of an unprecedented piece of legislation by the New South Wales Parliament, the so-called Brumby Bill. For the first time in Australia, a feral animal was protected in a national park.
I spent a lot of time lobbying both sides of the House, including the crossbenches. Because I'd been a former member, I knew what the way to go about it. And I used my skills with my knowledge of the Parliament and everything else to try and persuade them to support the bill when it went through the House with support.
Alongside Peter Cochrane, activist Lisa Caldwell has been a key figure in the fight to protect horses. Caldwell grew up in Sydney, but moved here after falling in love with the mountains and a mountain man. She's become a custodian of high country history and culture, symbolised by the horses.
They demonstrate the connection of our past and our identity, I guess. And they're the last connection. There's a few mountain huts that still exist, but, if it wasn't for the horses, there's nothing left to prove that we existed. They're the last piece.
Like many, she believes successive governments have destroyed the mountain way of life. For Lisa Caldwell, it's personal. Her husband's family was among those stripped of cattle grazing leases in Kosciuszko.
I think that's a lot of the frustration. When their livelihoods and their history was removed from the mountains at the same time as their towns were being flooded for the snowy scheme, they were being kicked out, and yet the ski resorts were moving in.
Yeah, and kneeling down when you do a long blow.
Charlie Massey's connection to the past is embedded in Kosciuszko, in the hills north of the Kyandra goldfields.
I'd say 4 or 5 k's.
It's where his father grazed cattle each summer, sharing his lease with the Caldwell family.
When the leases were taken off in the late 50s, 60s, my father was quite open about, look, the time had come. The stock were doing damage, we started to realise. And also, you know, droving for 2 weeks with increasing tourist traffic and stuff. You know, this time, as far as he was concerned, and he wasn't bitter at all about losing the leases. He realised it was time.
Charlie Massey remembers what a big deal this was for mountain families.
One of the leading ecologists whose work led to the formation of the Kosciuszko National Park, I know, after the leases were taken away in the 50s, he was beaten up in pubs and his children victimised at school. And those feelings still run on. I mean, it was a threat to identity and to livelihood.
Massey is as local as they come. He's a lifelong grazier who runs around 3,000 head of sheep on a property near Cooma. He has a PhD for his research into regenerative methods of farming. To his expert eye, the damage done by horses is clear.
To then see some of Australia's rarest species and endangered species at huge risk now being compromised for this false view about these heroic animals that they've portrayed, when really they're just a feral animal doing huge damage.
He questions the motivation of some horse supporters.
For some, it's driven by pecuniary interests, whether it's horse riding or whatever, camping trips. For others, their sense of heroic image is embedded in the man from Snowy River, rugged, bushman, hard riding, hard drinking sort of thing. But none of it has any relevance to do with the ecology. I'm a lover of the mountains. I love horses too. But for the preservation of that ecology, good science rather than romantic should be listened to.